I want to thank our sponsor, Abbey Connect. Impress callers, save time, and grow your business with a dedicated receptionist team from Abbey Connect. Visit abbeyconnect.com/MikeM for more information. That's abbeyconnect.com/MikeM.
I think I have, because I'm introverted, I did a ton of work from childhood up. I was the kid that chose to do projects alone.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it set the foundation for me to be really strong-minded, dedicated. I did all the research, I put everything together. And so I became really self-sufficient.
So this interview with Maureen Werbach, I thought was particularly interesting because of her introversion. It was something I didn't really expect us to explore so much, but you're going to hear how introversion was leveraged to be an asset and really build a phenomenal company. She's an authority in the space of mental health, and we're about to discover. So listen in.
Are you a
trying to pick? It's my husband, so I'm like, whatever you say, it is.
Do you want to share your maiden name?
Herman.
Herman. Okay. So you went from Herman to Werbach.
And I was born in Germany, which is funny.
I think Herman's
I got a more German name
here. Yeah, you went more German. Where were you born in Germany?
In Hanau, just an hour from Frankfurt. My mom, my whole family lives there. My mom and I are just here. My dad, his side of the family lives here, but he was in the military. Met my mom. They couldn't speak the same language. So clearly we know how they... I'm like, whenever they tell a story, I'm like, you guys... But yeah, wow. They were like 18, 19 and had me at 19 and 20.
So did you live in Germany for a period of time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived there until I was like 6. And then my dad had a hard time. The Germans didn't love the Americans back then. So he was like painting and like selling flowers and stuff. And was like, I just need to go back to the U.S. It's too hard here to like make a real living as an American after being out of the military. And so my parents moved here. My mom started working for Lufthansa, German airline, so she could fly back and forth.
Yeah, that's smart.
City, he's an electrician for the city. And then my mom retired early, like 6 years ago, and she's my practice manager in my business.
So here's the ultimate German test. My mother is German too.
Okay.
I was born in the U.S. Did your mom do hupta-hupta-rida with you?
No, but my oma did in Germany.
Your oma did. Okay. You're German. Yeah. You're German. You passed the test.
Yeah. With my mom, I wouldn't let her do anything German. I got Americanized really, really quickly. So I was embarrassed by my mom has a really strong German accent. So I'd be like, we're in America. Don't speak to me in German. I feel horrible. And now I'm like, I wish you would have just... forced me because my German, I sound like an American speaking German. So my family out there is like, you need to be practicing more.
you qualify, you define yourself as an extreme introvert.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
It just means I get really depleted by like social interaction, really. I am most energized working alone. I'm most energized by going for walks by myself, reading, every activity you can think of. It's usually me by myself, which has been interesting, having a family and having multiple businesses that have a lot of people involved in it.
Yeah. So I want to get some context on those businesses. I do want to ask one more thing for your, quote unquote qualifications. Are you, because you work with mental health therapists, are you a therapist yourself?
Yes.
So is that a clinical certification or how do you become a therapist?
I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor. So in the state of Illinois, you get your master's degree and then you have to work for a few years provisionally licensed before you become independently licensed.
Okay.
You can also be a licensed clinical social worker, different kind of training background, but you end up in the same place. So a lot of the people that work in my practice are licensed clinical social workers and they do the same thing. It's also a master's degree. Or you can be a psychologist. Again, very similar. we have some psychologists as well, and they do counseling. You just are getting a doctorate degree then at that point.
And with that certification as a, or as a licensed clinical professional, is that the words? Mm-hmm. Does, what does that give you a capability to do? What's your domain?
Yeah. It allows you to do, counseling and diagnosis. So okay. It's very general, and most clinicians will, after they get their master's degree or doctorate degree, will choose a niche area to work with and then get some advanced certifications beyond that, because your master's degree will really just give you the foundation to provide counseling, to assess and diagnose, but it doesn't go in depth into eating disorders and self-injury and postpartum and all those things. So once you get your degree, most people tend to work in nonprofit areas where they can kind of get their own hospital setting, so they can get their feelers out and have experience with a wide range of populations so that they can get a sense of what really fills their bucket, what they feel like.
Yeah, where their talent is, I guess. So in your, before you started the current organizations, you were practicing as a clinical professional, correct? Mm-hmm. Did you have, is it patients or clients? What's the term?
It depends on where you're at. So if you're in a hospital setting, they're patients. So I worked in the ER for a while and they were patients. And then if you're in private practice, most practices across the US will call them clients.
Clients. Mm-hmm. Did you have clients, patients that were extreme introverts? Did you experience people that were kind of mirroring some of your feelings and emotions?
Yeah.
So here's what I want to know about extreme introversion is it normal, aka typical, is it typical for an extreme introvert to have this success, particularly in extroverted areas? Because I consider your arena very extroverted. We're going to dig in a second, but I'm just wondering, are you an anomaly, or is there this misconception I have that actually introversion gives you a greater opportunity in a extroverted industry?
I don't think I'm unique. I think what happens, I know a lot of people who are introverted who have businesses or are entrepreneurs in areas where they have to be in contact with a lot of people, right? They're not painters that just paint and sell their stuff on the internet. And I think for a lot of us in the conversations I've had with other people that feel similarly to me, is that it almost is kind of happenstancy, I think I have, because I'm introverted, I did a ton of work from childhood up. I was the kid that chose to do projects alone. And I think it set the foundation for me to be really strong-minded, dedicated. I did all the research, I put everything together. And so I became really self-sufficient, which I think is a good quality when trying to build something that's really hard. And, and I think that happens to a lot of people who are introverted. And then what happens is, at least in my case, and in some of the people that I've talked to who are similar to me, is that the thing snowballs in a way that you don't expect. Mm. And that's where, the business grows in a way that you didn't expect. And then all of a sudden you realize, as you grow, you just need more people around you to support you, to support the business. And then that's where, for me, that's where the anxiety came in around having to lean on other people, to have to really spend a lot of my time in meetings and conversations with people when I would much rather kind of stay laser focused and in my lane. But I think, as you'd probably agree, that's where I realized that systems was such an important part of my businesses. And that was what helped kind of bring down any anxiety I might've had having to be around a lot of people and spend a lot of my time, because I still do, but I was able to hand things off to other people so that I could stay, true to what my strength areas were, and not become overwhelmed with just the barrage of people.
Tell me about your businesses, just to give me some context.
Yeah. My first one. So I actually had my own business. This is how you'll know I'm an introvert. making jewelry when I was in
by yourself in the corner in the dark room.
Totally. I rented a room in a store in Andersonville, which is like a really cute town in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And once a week I would make all my jewelry. Once a week I would go to the store and I would literally pick a time where I knew it wasn't going to be really busy, so there wouldn't be a lot of people there. And I would put my stuff up and then they would sell it all and, you know, tell me it's time to replenish. And I'd come, I mean, it was like the perfect introvert, job or job because I was able to really do what I loved, you know, fast forward going through grad school and wanting to be a therapist. And then starting my own business, which is the first business I have, is a counseling group practice with three locations as of right now. And just about 40 people that work in my practice. Mm-hmm. And then I have the Group Practice Exchange, which is consulting for other group practice business owners. And that has like a membership. That's kind of the prime piece of that is membership. And then the last thing is the conference, which you've been to both. It's only 2 years old right now. And you've keynoted at both of those conference for mental health group practice owners.
Yeah. Thank you for having me there. This year obviously was tough because we had to do it remotely. I was still able to pick on my high school friend who was in the audience nonetheless. Tell me about the Group Practice Exchange, the membership. How many members are in that organization?
In the paid membership, there's just under 800 members.
I'm expecting 80, 800. I mean, that is a big organization. So, and clearly that's only paid. So there's a larger constituency of unpaid.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We have, in my Facebook group, which is like the free place, there's like 5,000 people.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So this is not computing with me because are you the face for the Group Practice Exchange?
Yeah.
And so how do you keep 800 people engaged, paying people engaged, and sustain congruency with introversion?
I decided about, so the membership piece of that business, for a long time I was doing one-on-one coaching and group coaching. And 2 years ago, in July of 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I started the membership program. And I decided that I felt like I was getting depleted by just the constant need for me.
Yeah.
By all the people in the Facebook group and my email list and all of that. More so than my group practice, which has, I feel like it's more robust. It's got 40 employees. It has a big impact on the community, but this little consulting, where it's just me, felt so much more mentally depleting because every day it was Facebook messages, people tagging me, people thinking like I need to consume you and your stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I started the membership, you know, there's really only so much information you can give in any arena, and eventually you start repeating, right?
That's right.
And so I decided I've given so much information out there. And I think I can package it in a way where people don't need to keep pulling from me, and we can have, I can have VAs who can direct them to literal trainings I've done on it versus repeating myself. But I also did something I think is really smart just for me specifically being introverted, was I decided that I wanted the membership site to be a hub where they can get experts and not just me. So I have seven other facilitators. You know, Casey Compton, she's one of them. Yeah, and Clark, he's one. Mm-hmm. And so they also go in, I pay them every month, and they do open office hours. They have different specialty areas. And so it kind of spread everyone's vying for my attention and asking me for everything, to spreading it across a handful of other professionals who are entrepreneurs who really know their stuff and have different experiences than I do.
Does that threaten your control? I mean, could there all these splinter groups start? Was there any risk of that? Is there a risk of that?
I guess there's always a risk of that because, you know, the facilitators that do the Q&A calls also have their own coaching type businesses. So it's a possibility. And I've thought a lot about that. But at the end of the day, I keep reminding myself I want to come from an abundance mindset, not a scarcity mindset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, although I'm sure there's been people that have kind of trafficked over because they really like what those coaches have had to say inside of my membership, mm-hmm. I feel like as long as I'm doing what got this all started and what has brought the amount of people in, that'll keep going, even if some kind of float out.
You know, one thing I'm hearing here, and I want to get your opinion on this, is that I think I used to associate introversion with social awkwardness. But what I'm hearing is introversion is just the energy source is inward as opposed to outward.
Yeah. I'll say both though. Yeah.
What was that?
I'll say that I'm both of those, introverted and socially awkward.
Why do you say you're socially awkward?
I don't know. People say, whenever I say I'm socially awkward, my friends always say that doesn't even make sense. But I feel like I navigate the world in an awkward way. I'm not great with jokes.
Yeah.
So I feel like I don't know, the way I see things is a little different. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I think there must be a spectrum. So, you know, there's extraordinary introversion. There's to the point where maybe it immobilizes any form of outward communication. And then I think it goes all the way up to a kind of a neutral state to extreme extroversion, where it's someone who actually has anxiety by being with them by themselves.
Right.
I consider myself actually slanted toward introversion, meaning I actually get more energy on writing a book or contemplating or sitting in my office without communicating. Conversely, there's a point where it's like, I need social contact. Do you get that way too? Is there a certain point where you can be at that jewelry store working so many hours without seeing anyone that at a certain point, like, I just need to see somebody. Like, do you ever feel that?
No, I'll say you might be a little more ambivert. I don't know if you've heard
of that. Yeah, ambivert is in the middle, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to live alone in a cabin for the rest of my life.
Right.
So there's that, but I need to experience life and see life. I just don't need, I think it would take a long time for me to say, oh my gosh, I really need to, you know, hang out with someone. I just do it a lot anyways, so I don't get to miss it. But I think what I would miss is if I was alone for it, like if I went to a cabin for a year, what I would miss is just going out and experiencing, seeing other people walking around. And I like to be in the presence of others every once in a while, but I don't need to chit chat. And I mean, I feel like a lot of conversations are superficial and aren't
totally.
And so I'm like, oh, I don't have time for all this.
Okay. So I wonder if there's this other element playing in too, is you have an insatiable drive, and you know, the metrics speak for themselves. 800 paid members in one company, one business. You have 40 employees in your practice, plus you're running events. I mean, that requires extraordinary drive. And it's interesting what you just said is when, you know, sometimes when you engage in conversation, it's super superficial. It's simply a social dance and there's no relevance. Do you apply that kind of filter to the work you're doing, you know, relevance or not? Is that drive a big component? What's your feelings?
Yeah. I do tend, and my clinical director in my group practice will say I'm kind of no frills, which for her, she's very social. She's the opposite of me, which is why we work really well together in keeping that business going, because two of me would not be good. But she'll say often, you know, the way I come at conversations is with her when we have a meeting every week where she talks about what's going on in the clinical side of the business. And I talk about a little bit of the visionary piece and what I'm working on and how that relates to her and what she might need to do. And she'll often say, I have a set of conversations that I want to have with her and I don't veer off. And sometimes she'll kind of go into talking about, you know, something that's going on in her life or whatever. And then I'll say, so with that thing with that clinician over there, and
she'll be right back.
Yes. I'm just like, I need to get through these things. I don't have a lot of time. I feel like because I have multiple businesses that all need things a lot of times, I'm just really direct on, let's stick to the points. And I even with her specifically, we give 10 minutes of her being able to just talk in the beginning.
That's funny. That's funny. So you give her a window to get out what she needs.
That's her thing. Yeah.
Which actually, I assume you're actually giving her energy by letting her talk. You're giving her energy. And then you get into the driving component. I was studying this thing called the four temperaments. Are you familiar with this concept?
Yes. It's been a while since I've read about it. So go ahead and
explain. Yeah. So listen, I understand at a very infantile stage. So a small amount. So I know it was a concept of the four personality types, at least purported by this philosopher. And I think it goes back to 200 AD or something. It's old. And they talked about caloric and these different terms, which I don't remember, but modernizing, you had basically the analytic, someone that studies numbers intensely. Converse, the opposite of them was the expressive, someone that just needs to talk and talk and talk. You had the driver, someone that needs to see results. And then you had the passive, the person that just wants to serve and give, but doesn't want to direct and lead. Of these categories, your clinical director and you, it almost sounds like you're opposites, or is there a complement between you where there's a link?
I almost look at it like the color wheel, you know?
Okay.
The ends are very complementary. And so her being so opposite of me helps keep our staff happy. Obviously, because she loves to communicate and just gets so engaged in people's lives, is like, well, how are you? What is going on?
Yeah.
That's really helpful for workplace culture in our practice, where my style would not, it's something I value a lot because I know it's something that is not my strong suit, to just really sit in people's offices and spend time like thinking about what things we need to do and get done. And so I find that to be a really big benefit for the business, her being very different than I am in that sort of way.
To me, the prototypical leader of an organization is the king of charisma or the queen of charisma, and outgoing. I think of some leaders on the kind of national or political front. It's all about their ability to communicate and connect. Bill Clinton was very famous for that. The fact that you're intentionally putting yourself behind the scenes more seems like a little more like Wizard of Oz. You're behind the curtain. Does that relinquish control? Does that, with it, not thinking about your membership now, I'm thinking about your group practice, your 40 employees, do they see the clinical director as the leader, and does that put your business at risk?
No, I think that's interesting. As you were saying that whole thing, I never even thought.
Yeah, I said very extroverted too. I said ambivert, just kept on going and going.
Yeah, but it makes a lot of sense. I never actually thought about that it's true. Most leaders and political leaders, they're charismatic. They're able to like hold an audience. And is not the way I interact in the world as a leader. I think what makes my business unique, and that it just works with me, because I am really proud that my practice has really low turnover. People stay. I have all my first employees that I've ever hired 9 years
ago. My gosh.
Yeah. And the few who have left have moved out of state, or, one got pregnant and decided to be a stay-at-home mom. But really, we've had people love being there. I think what I did that helped was I'm very determined, and I'm really good with communicating. So I'm open about what my role is, what I'm doing, and everything that I do in that business is geared towards ensuring that my clinicians feel heard, seen, valued, compensated well, in doing their best work, and that my community is getting the services they can. And so they see what I'm doing as really social justice oriented, and that it's, very caring for the people versus just numbers driven, data driven, although I'm very data driven. Everything that I'm doing, even though I'm maybe not super social and hanging out with everyone in there, they know everything that I'm doing is in their best interest. So often they're like, we know what you're doing is to make sure that we're, getting to do the best work that we can. So that's where they are seeing all that value.
Mm-hmm.
Is in my, I'm kind of like a caretaker without being that socially,
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a structure that protects them and serves them. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. What I'm hearing as you were sharing that is introversion is one variable versus extroversion. And then you have drive versus, lack of drive. I don't know what the opposite is. Idleness. I don't know what the right term is, but high introvert, high drive is manifesting. What I'm hearing is systems, structure, focus, like let's get shit done.
Yes.
I wonder if high introversion, low drive or no drive results in go to that cabin in the woods and you'll never see me again.
Yes. Yes. I mean, as I'm thinking very quickly, that would, I can't see a sustainable entrepreneur with that combo.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the extroverted sort of world, I should say, obviously that person can maybe be writing books, but even then.
Well, it requires drive then, right?
Yeah.
And then of course you could have high extrovert, high drive, but I wonder if that is more of that kind of social leader, more of the schmoozer, the political person, socialite maybe. But then you have the high extrovert, no drive, and they're probably just like kind of floating through life, hanging out on the beach, trying to, you know, just meet everyone at the bar they can and you know, just not actively contributing. I wonder if that's a good assessment.
I think so. I what you're saying sounds true, and obviously there's people that are going to be outliers to all of those sure. scenarios, but I will agree with that. Which makes me feel really good about my high drive.
I have a licensed clinical professional that just approved what I said. I'm going to make a note of that. So tell me what you think your biggest strengths or assets are by having a high drive, high introversion. I heard data analysis. I want to hear a little bit more about that. Maybe there's other ones. Like what does that mean, data analysis? How does that serve you?
So the way I'm really big on measuring things, measuring success, measuring whether something's working or not. As I had mentioned before, I'm pretty no frills and I don't like to have meaningless conversations. And I also don't like to, that translates over to, I don't like to do things that are wasting my time or other people's time in my businesses. So I track a lot of things to measure whether or not it's valuable to keep doing those things. It's probably one thing that my clinical director gets overwhelmed by with me because everything that we talk about is, you know, is this serving everyone the way it needs to? Is it serving the business the way it needs to? Is it serving the community, the thing that we're doing or the product? You know, we just started something new a few months ago, webinars, educational webinars. We got certified to provide continuing education to therapists. You have to get like nationally certified to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have all this data. We know what the break-even point is for how many courses we would need to sell to the public to make that sustainable. Cause I brought someone on salaried to run it because I said, I cannot pick another thing up here. I put it together and then let someone else run it. So I have a high focus on just having data that supports that the work that we're doing makes sense. And it makes it easier for me to then just make small adjustments and it guides me to see what we should do more of, what we should do less of.
So I love that.
Words galore.
So clearly, if it's working, do more of it. If it's not working, do less.
Mm-hmm.
Those metrics. So, for example, that webinar you started for the certification or the ongoing education for therapists.
Mm-hmm.
What are the measurements you're making? Just income to see if you hit the break even, or is there other numbers you track?
Yeah, we're tracking. So we're with the courses. We needed to track the fact that my person is being paid a salary, whether we sell one course or a bajillion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So her salary counts as something we're in the negative immediately before we mm-hmm. even start. So we put any operating expenses that relate specifically to that program. It's called the Academy, Urban Wellness Academy.
Okay.
And then, you know, things like website management, we have Learn Dash and a bunch of programs that you have to pay yearly subscriptions for to make it work, along with her salary. And then our therapists are the ones that are my whole point in putting that together. Weirdly enough, was a year ago, in May, so a little over a year ago, I had this idea, how can I diversify the income that my therapists are making in case something happens? So weird that it, you know, the pandemic sort of hit right around the time when the certification went through and we could finally actually start it. I just always thought, what happens if, I don't know, something wacky happens with insurance and we're not getting paid anymore. The clinicians aren't. I want to make sure that we can diversify their services and have a bigger impact on the community, which is what kind of brought to light this. So my clinicians get paid they do the trainings, they get paid for it. And then my director of the program then makes sure that she's going out into the community to like put that out there so that we get sales. So we're tracking the cost of paying the person, the therapist to do it, the person who's salaried, who puts it all together, some of the operating expenses tied to it. And we figured out that if we're selling for, let's say, $49 per hour, that we would need to sell 1,051, I think it is, courses to break even, just to break even.
On an annual basis.
Annual basis, yeah.
Right.
So okay. Obviously, if we decide to sell for a course, you know, for $69, it's going to drive down how many we need. But that it was kind of an initial buffer because I wanted to see what does this look feasible before we even started.
I love it. There's another thing I heard, and I wonder if this is an introversion asset, is you said that you were thinking, what if, and you're playing out these scenarios, what if, you know, traditional therapy goes away or insurance stops paying? Is that an asset? Is that a strength of yours? Is that your future projecting and adjusting and addressing?
Yeah, I think that is what helped us through this pandemic. You know, right in the beginning, I have, you know, a pretty large platform for group practice owners. So I can see all around the US how group practice owners were responding right in the beginning of the pandemic, where traditionally 99% of us were in person doing therapy. You know, there were a couple of group practices that were telehealth practices to begin with, but very rare. And for me, it was really easy. And I think this is where, you know, I have strengths in one area and I have some weakness in other area as an entrepreneur. I would say my weakness area would be that I could be more, you know, engaging with people and be more interested in the small talk and conversations and be more people-y. My strength though is I am so okay with failing and trying and adjust. And for me, it feels like a challenge. When the pandemic hit, minus the fact that it is, you know, killing people, the challenge of this is shifting our whole business was actually exciting for me, because it was a challenge that I love being forced to look at my business in a different way and having a shift. And so, yes to your answer.
You said you're okay with failing. I wonder if that, as an introvert, tell me if this rings true with you, that social significance, social status isn't as important potentially as someone's highly extroverted and their social ranking matters more. Therefore, as an introvert, if I fail, it's more of a personal challenge. As an extrovert, it's a social crisis.
Yes.
Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
Yes. And I feel like I have control, you know, because it's I'm really focused in on what I can do. And so I don't mind as a person failing. Yes, it is very true. I'm not looking at what does the world see when I'm failing. And even if they were, I'm, you know, in my conversations with my leadership team, I'm often saying, I don't know the answer to this. What do you guys think? I, you know, or that didn't work. I thought that this would be a really smart idea and clearly it's not. Let's put all of our heads together and see what we can do differently. I think that it makes me a more trusting person to my team, that they can see that I fail and that I own it and I can gracefully like step back in and try to reroute. But it never feels scary. It's like the one part of business, which I think is very scary for a lot of people, is what happens if I fail and I lose it all? And for me, it's always this exciting challenge because I feel like I will make it work. You know, it's like the grit piece. Whether it's the way I thought it was going to work or a different way, it'll work. We're going to get there. I'm not going to, you know, throw my hands up in the air and just be done.
Do you feel relatively bulletproof to criticism?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Weirdly enough, because I think because I'm so introverted, I do actually have sensitivities to what other people think. And I think it's because I am not always connecting and trying to schmooze people, that when it's usually when it feels like it's something about me. If it's about my business, I don't feel anything because I know what I'm doing in my business. But if it somehow relates to me, and I think I don't know if you feel this, but the more impact you're having, the more people want to know about, you know, everything, even beyond your business. Like, what are your thoughts on this? And what's, you know, and then it's like, it feels a little bit too, you know, in my introvert self, like you're trying to expose something of me that I'm not wanting to give out.
Yeah. Yeah. I do feel that the greater the, I wouldn't even say success, but the greater the exposure we have, the more people put significance into what we say and think. I feel I call it like Z-list celebrity ship. is, you know, in your community, everyone knows who you are. Everyone knows who you are. In my community, there's a good chunk of people that know who I am. And those people then put this credibility into what we say, but are much more, I think, also judgy. Like if you fall short or something like that, I think it's much easier to criticize that more public type figure.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, Maureen, this was some fascinating insights on what it takes. My final assessment is this, that introversion or extreme introversion has a real significant advantage if it's coupled with drive. You know, that grit comes about. It's data driven. It's just the facts, man. Future looking, which I never really anticipated thinking about that, but the able to look down the road, and also that you don't take the you don't have a fear of failing because of the social significance. It's really a personal record. These insights were great, Maureen. Thank you so much for joining today and sharing all you had to share.
Yeah, it was good seeing you again.
Okay. So that was Maureen. Give me first impressions.
I loved Maureen.
I kind of love her too.
I do too.
I think it's amazing, you know, as we progress through life, like really coming into our own and leveraging these skill sets. And introversion, I think, you know, obviously it presents differently in people, but your ability to process and analyze, you know, data and situations, and then you know, particularly in the realm of counseling too, like your ability to listen and be able to process that information easily and effectively, it's just really amazing. And I love how she leveraged it and has done such amazing things. And I particularly loved when she talked about creating the exchange and how she found that so draining, because it was people wanted from her and you know, wanted to consume her. And her solution to that was, I thought, such a great one to then involve other counselors and to be able to leverage them in that way to still serve people, and that she kept the abundance mindset, because ultimately at the end of the day, whatever your mission is, that's what you want to happen, however people make it happen. And I think if you stay consistent with that, if your mission is to serve, you will ultimately still attract the right people consistently and increasingly over time.
What'd you think, Amy?
I was thinking it was interesting to me to note that the personality component of drive in a introvert compared to an extrovert, and how that plays into being a business person. You guys kept talking about, you know, who would be the person who goes and lives in the cabin in the woods. And I really see how its drive is so much related to that. I think I don't have drive, or I don't know what area I have drive in. Mm-hmm. So my introvertedness tends me to, I think I would be the person in the cabin. I think I'm the person who could live in the cabin.
I think you're driven to serve people and to be better and do better.
And so I was coming around to that too, because I was thinking, well, that's not true. I have passions, and the passion would send me into overdrive and have me act above and beyond what my introversion, I feel, sometimes would allow.
Yeah.
Mikey, and I was surprised about you. You feel you're an introvert of sorts?
Yeah, and maybe ambivert. I think that's the word she used.
Yeah, ambivert.
Ambivert. I think it was a good choice of words. My definition is not comfort in, I think the general definition of extroversion is someone that's very comfortable with others versus not comfortable. And that's really not what it is. It's source of energy. At least that's what I learned from this thing.
Yeah.
An introvert gets an internal source. Extrovert is a external source. And from that, I have a more of an internal drive and feel a draining when I'm in a social circumstance for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
But it's mild, but it drains over time. It's when I'm in that back in the hotel room now, processing and cranking away, where I'm actually gaining energy again. So that's why I'd put myself lean toward introvert, but ambivert's probably the best selection of words. I like the three elements that she mentioned. She's more, as an introvert, she has that data-driven element where she can interpret the numbers and see clearly through them and translate what it means. I like the future looking too, is when something fails, she is finding their trigger, the cause, and planning forward for that not to happen again. You know, she's looking forward. And my favorite part though was the failure part specifically.
Yeah.
When she's like, I'm okay with failing because the social consequence isn't important to me, which right. I think as you kind of go through the throttle toward higher degrees of extroversion, that social significance becomes more and more important. And failure then, you know, as seen as others, can be really painful because others think less of us, or at least that's what
we interpret. And it's magnified, I guess, because so many looking, so it feels like so many are looking at you.
Exactly. And so for her, it's like, who cares what people think is what I translated from that.
I think she made the distinction too, that like, because she's so introverted, she almost has a buffer between, you know, public opinion. So it's not that she doesn't care. It's that like, she has a little bit of a buffer. So it doesn't even faze her, you know, as long as she stays in that world where she, you know, isn't connected and consumed with that, she can continue to then shift and try something else.
Right.
The results speak for themselves. She has 3 locations, 40 employees, 800 paid members out of a 5,000 active membership. She runs a conference on mental health. You know, those are some serious accolades. And I think there's some learning to be had from that interview on how to achieve the same for yourself. We want to know what you heard too, our friends. So please post and rate and review us. It's a brand new podcast we're doing. Do you like the new format or not? Give us an honest rating and please share what your thoughts are in the reviews. That would help us. And if you subscribe, it'll help you get new future episodes. All right, do we have a little game to play?
We do. Jeremy's not here, but he did leave us a game. He left us in good hands. So guys, do you even want to guess what the topic is for Maureen's episode? What would the game topic be?
Something about introversion?
Nope.
Something about counseling?
Mental health?
No. I'll tell you. German heritage.
Of course. Wow. Oh, because of Verbach. Verbach. I will tell you this, Kels, as we go through this experience, I think now we're going to have definitive proof if Jeremy's questions are poorly created and are confusing, or is it Jeremy when he presents them? So when Amy presents them, if we understand what she's talking about, it's Jeremy's presentations.
Oh, now the pressure's on. Okay. All right. So the first one is, are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, what is the name given to the garden gnomes in German gardens? Is it Ein Gartenzweig, Ein Girlszweig, Girlsberg, or Ein Gartenzweig? How are you even going to remember that one, right? Should you want to go with one, two, or three?
Ein Zweierdreieck.
Ein Zweierdreieck.
Okay, I got my answer.
All right. Second one. The famous Haribo brand gummy bears stands for what? Hallo, Riesen Bonbons, or Halb Rilbefest Botanik, or Hans Riegel Bonn. Again, Kelsey, Ein Zweierdreieck.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like a translation to an English word that I would be able to try to make against it.
All right. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Coca-Cola invented Fanta for the German market because in wartime, Germany, A, hated the taste of Coca-Cola, or B, production of Coca-Cola was difficult, or C, interest in a brown soft drink went down. I don't know. Do you want to hear them again, or do you just want me to tell you?
No, I don't. Yeah. I'm good.
Okay.
I think Gartenzweig. Eins, number one, I think was it.
I said number three.
Mike, you actually said it, but it was number three. So you're both right.
Half a point.
Ein Gartenzweig. Yeah, that's it. That's the right.
I wonder what that translates to. Is it garden?
Garden. Like
slime bucket?
Whatever a
bird. What did you just say?
Slime bucket.
That's definitely.
I will tell you this: the Germans are very harsh. My mother's German, and growing up, we read Hansel and Gretel, the real
Hansel. Yeah, supposed to send you under the bed, under your covers.
Yeah, and those kids go in the oven, and they actually get cooked. Like there's cooking going on. Well, the bag, I guess. Like it's horrible. They cut off fingers.
Yeah.
Maxim Morris. Oh my God! Horrible.
You know. The German tradition, I think, is where my father's tradition, there's like an anti-Santa Claus that comes and takes away bad children.
Schwarz.
something like that. And I can't remember the name, but my father was threatened regularly with this other horrible man who came in instead of Santa and took you if you didn't behave. So Germans are rough and tough. Okay. Yeah. All right. The famous Haribo brand gummy bears stands for what?
I said number two.
I said number three.
Oh, Mike got it again. Hans Riegel Bonn. It's Hans Riegel is the name of the founder and Bonn is the town.
I was going to say three, except that I answered three on the first one. So I thought I
got to mix it up.
Dang it.
And I just wanted to be said, it was not, I thought it was Schwarz something, Schwarz Peter, I thought it was, like, which means Black Peter. But no, it was Krampus.
Okay.
Which is the anti-Santa.
Anti-Santa.
Yeah, the Germans, man. Out of control.
Yeah, scary people. We're lucky we came out alive, Mike.
Yes.
Okay. Coca-Cola invented Fanta for the German market because in wartime, Germany, what did you guys say?
I said number two, it was hard to produce Coca-Cola.
Mike, what did you say?
I say three, the brown, but I don't like that one.
Kelsey got that one right. Production of Coca-Cola was difficult. Ingredients were hard to source. Yay! I don't know what the scoring was on that.
Kelsey wins.
It was tied. Yeah.
Oh, I gave myself a half point for that first one because I gave the wrong number.
No, but you said it right. Yeah. You said it right. You get points for saying
it. Which should almost count for more. The fact that I ignored the actual verbiage altogether was...
Yeah. All right, my friends. You've listened to another episode of Mike Up In Your Business. We hope you had some fun. We hope you got all the answers correct. And make sure you subscribe and join us for future episodes. Thanks for joining us.
Bye. Bye.
Customers no longer base their loyalty solely on price or product. Instead, they stay loyal due to the experience they have. And their customer experience begins from the very first call they make to your business. Are you still using an answering machine? I hope not. Did you know that 85% of callers who only reach voicemail will hang up and call the next place on their list? Don't let that happen to you. Inbound phone calls are still critical to growing your business. Get help from Abbey Connect. Abbey Connect is no ordinary answering service. They assign your company a team and then train them on how your business works. They set up appointments and consultations. Also, they have a new mobile app that allows you to make calls and send texts from your business phone line. People prefer doing business with people, not machines. Abbey Connect can start answering your calls today, improving your customer experience while saving you time and money. It's easy to get started. Get a 14-day free trial with no setup fees and no credit card needed by signing up at abbeyconnect.com/MikeM. That's abbeyconnect.com/MikeM or call 833-ABBEY-WOW and say my name.